then, a paragon of perfection?
Why can't you be more like our roommate?
Oh, and why can't you be more like Martha Stewart?
You better get your ducks in a row, Mr. Tim.
Quack, quack, quack.
You don't deserve having gear leaving it lying around like that.
I certainly do deserve gear. I work hard every day, and furthermore, I live in this house too, and I have rights here as well. And you, Hortense, are not the boss of me.
So, that's what not to do. Anne is going to straighten us around, and you will all have a chance to participate with your feelings and what you've noticed during a very generously extended community dialogue today. So, be prepared to have your questions answered.
I am thrilled today to welcome my friend Anne Harrington to the Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship. I was privileged to have an employer in Duluth that hired her to offer nonviolent communication training, referred to as NVC, to help us in our work and personal lives. I have come to value the tools of nonviolent communication to help me recognize when I or someone else is ticked off or otherwise bothered, so that I may be able to respond in a way that will strengthen our connection. Anne has earned degrees in education and speech-language pathology. She also is a graduate of the Coaches Training Institute and Co-Active Leadership Training Program in San Rafael, California. She's taught students of all ages and in a variety of settings. Anne began her training in NVC about 15 years ago, and I think you'll recognize her passion for teaching this life-changing process to help people, relationships, communities, and conflict transformed through more compassionate communication. Together, Anne and I have used the Unitarian Church in Duluth to offer NVC to the Duluth community. It's now my great pleasure to introduce her to you.
Thank you, Sue, and everyone for this amazing welcome to Thunder Bay, to your community. I notice I'm a little taller. There we go. Oh, that's good. That's good. And I would like to start by saying what a privilege it is to be in your midst. And I noticed the title of what I'm sharing is called Making Life Wonderful. And I already feel like my life has been made so much more wonderful just by being here these last couple days, yesterday, being in community, and here today, in the music. Just everything about the service so far has been wonderful for me. It has really met needs for connection with the universe, and music is a huge connector for me. So I'm basking in that already. So what I would like to start out with today is a quote that you're probably very familiar with already by Rumi. It's been around a long time. And that quote says, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I will meet you there. I love that, because to me, that is about making life wonderful, especially when it comes to communication. And as you're listening to me right now, I would like to ask you each, in in the silence of your heart and mind, to think about something about which you are longing to be fully heard and understood about. Just take 15 seconds to let yourself think about something you're longing to be heard well about, to be gotten on. And hold that in your heart as I'm talking today about NVC, nonviolent compassionate communication. A lot of people say to me, Ann, I can see you're passionate about NVC. Well, what is it exactly anyway? What is it? Could you kind of give me an elevator speech or a little idea of what the heck is it? All these acronyms. So I've written a couple things down here that I'm hoping will keep me on track, because when I get passionate, I get excited. So I am going to be looking at my notes. Imagine interacting with one another in a way that allows everyone's needs and values to be respected equally. A tall order. So NVC starts to address that. NVC is a way of sorting language that is coming out of you and coming towards you. Have you ever been in that situation where you feel like a deer in the headlights with a comment or something that's coming towards you? You hardly know, what am I going to do with that? So NVC is a way to sort and reframe that type of thing, and also when it's coming out of you. I also like the word translating. In NVC, we translate hard-to-hear messages into NVC language. So it's like we're learning to speak another language, even though it's all in English. It's a different way of looking at the language and sorting it, as I've just said. NVC is a way of giving mutual respect and understanding using a set of language skills. They do require some practice, but they're not hard at all. It's a pretty simple model, a pretty simple system. I just wouldn't say it's easy. It's simple, it's just not easy. It takes some practice. I now view NVC as a learned leadership skill. When I first started teaching and sharing and really committing to NVC, people would say, nonviolent, compassionate communication. Yeah, I don't know. I don't relate to the word nonviolent, they'd say, and compassion sounds like Minnesota nice. Sounds too nice. I just don't want to be that nice. I feel like I really have to give people a piece of my mind sometimes, so I'm not so sure I like that. All that compassion, nice stuff. Well, the reason I say it's a learned leadership skill is because NVC is not about being nice. At all. It is about being compassionately honest in a way maybe we haven't practiced before. It's about being authentic. It's about being real. Talking about what's true for you in a way other people can hear. And again, we don't control how they hear us. We don't control them. We can only affect ourselves. But to the best of our ability, NVC is a way to put out with compassionate honesty and authenticity what's real and true for us. So we have some responsibility in how we put that out there. We could put it out like Hortense and Timothy did just now. We can put it out that way. And that can end in disconnection. And then there's a cleanup process. There's a repair process that has to happen or not. Think about situations in our lives that are left unrepaired or we don't know how to repair them. They stay semi-disconnected or totally disconnected. Okay. So, as I said, I view NDC as a leadership skill. Not leading and controlling that way. But, did you have your hand up? No? I just want to make sure people can hear me. But as a way to lead with awareness about what we choose to say and what we're contributing to connection. I'd also like to share how I got into NVC. I know I'm always interested in hearing that from other people, and I'd like to share with you how I got into it. As Sue said, I've studied speech-language pathology. That was my job, my area of study. And I was always interested in communication. But I noticed that in all those years of study and getting a degree and everything, nobody ever talked about this kind of communication, this kind of sorting and reframing. And I noticed in my 20-year career in speech pathology, I noticed that I was beginning to become more interested in the relationship between the parents and the kids that I was doing speech therapy with, or the person who had had the stroke, the family members, the spouse, the family, the communication, and what they were going through. I began to be more interested in what was going on in that kind of communication than I was in actually the speech pathology end of things. So that was a clue to me that something was shifting for me. And in the middle of that awareness, our oldest daughter, we have two grown daughters now, our oldest daughter's name is Annalisa, and she got out of college and was very interested in law slash mediation. So she only had a bachelor's degree, so she got a job in Chicago as a mediation manager for a mediation center in Chicago that dealt with public issues. So she became a public community mediator and managed this group. She came home for Christmas that first year of her first year job out of college and had Marshall Rosenberg's NVC book with her. And she said, I got to get this book read. The whole time I'm home, I have to go back with this book read. This is a work assignment because we're going to be discussing this in our department meeting. So Christmas vacation came and went. She flew back to Chicago. And guess who left the book on the dining room table? And guess who got to read it? Me. So she called and she said, Mom, you got to send that book back. I have to leave this discussion. And I said, I'll send it back as soon as I've read it. As soon as I've completely finished it, I'm almost done. So fortunately, we had enough time to get all that done. But that was my first introduction to NVC. It totally grabbed my attention. And I do have books here. If you get to just page through it, you'll see it's packed with stories and real-life situations that people come across, especially Marshall Rosenberg, who wrote the book and founded this model, because he saw that people were really longing to make life more wonderful, just didn't know exactly how to do it under pressure. And if anything describes me, that's it. I didn't know what to do under pressure. So that takes me to the next part of my story. You know now how I got into NVC. I read the book. And that led me to going to a training in Minneapolis and eventually one in Arizona that was longer. And then just various things that just kept reminding me, this appeals to me. This is something I've needed my whole life. So if you were going to picture me in my realization of why I was so attracted to NVC, I drew this on a whiteboard yesterday at the workshop. But imagine a stick woman standing there in the middle of the space. And I'm excited about my life. I really want to be connected with people I love. I want to meet new people. And I have a habit of trying to stay connected by being what I call too nice. So on the left side, I would swing over. If you picture a pendulum swinging, I'd swing over to the left, and I would be really nice, probably too nice, what I would call too nice, overly accommodating, trying really hard to work it out. And then if I stayed on the too nice side too long, I didn't really want to be nice anymore. And then I got fed up, actually, you could say resentful, ticked off, bugged, didn't know what to do with that, and then I'd swing over to the right side and become what I call too nasty. And then I'd sock it to them, give them a piece of my mind, and then I'd have to apologize for that. That didn't really meet my need for integrity and who I really wanted to be and my values for integrity and mutual respect. So then I'd swing way over here on the left again and become too nice. over-apologizing for my mistake. And did I offend you? Are we still connected? Are we still friends? About blah, 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 blah. You know, it was exhausting. And that's what I began to notice, that I was really tired of that pattern. Just exhausted. I thought there's got to be another way. And that's what NBC started to really show me, that under my feet, kind of like right down the center of my body, if you can imagine that stick woman, with a big heart. Once I got connected here to my heart and began to sort in the NBC way, I felt like I had a new kind of, I'd call it a freedom platform under my feet. I was standing on new ground, aware of myself, aware of you, other people, but I also had some tools to take care of myself when I felt like a deer in the headlights, or I felt like something was coming at me that was mean, rude, whatever. I had a way to sort it and talk myself through that and actually stay present in the interaction. So that is really what really grabbed me about NBC and still does today. I'm still not particularly comfortable in conflict, but now I have skills. Because what I really want to do is I want to pay attention to what I'm needing. I want to pay attention to what the other person is needing. We do need to solve the problem. It's not just going to go away on its own. So how do we stay connected with each of our needs long enough to actually get to a solution? And with NBC, that is so possible. Now that gives me hope and encouragement, and it also is a confidence builder. We don't have to slide back into the old patterns. We actually have an option to lead in a new direction. I can already tell I'm getting all excited, and I'm getting way off my notes. But anyway, okay. I put down here a word that's come to me when I was feeling in the pendulum swing. I just felt wobbly. I felt wobbly. That was uncomfortable for me. So NBC is a skill that I am learning, probably for the rest of my time on the planet. It helps me feel unwobblified. That's my new term for it. I'm getting unwobblified. And so remembering Rumi again, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I will meet you there. My big question about NVC is, I want to meet you there, but how do I actually do that under pressure, as I've already said? So we get curious. We make the choice to lead by being genuinely curious about what's going on in ourselves, what's alive in me, what am I feeling and needing, and wondering genuinely what's going on for the other person. What are they feeling and needing to be saying what they're saying? And a couple acronyms I really like are WAIT, which stands for why am I talking? Why am I talking? Ask yourself that. You have a feeling and you have a need probably, or you would not be talking. The same beautiful question we could ask about them. Acronym WATT. Why are they talking? What are their feelings and what are their needs? They have a need or they would not be talking. Okay? So that has really helped me. And I call that my new sorting method. Also, I'd like to talk a little bit about the word nonviolent. A lot of people say, I'm not violent. I don't need NBC. I don't need nonviolent, compassionate communication because I'm not violent. So I'd like to talk about that word a little bit, the way Marshall Rosenberg used it when he put together the model, to help you understand why that word's even in there and part of NVC. And I found this very interesting from a speech pathology viewpoint too, from words and language. So you may or may not know that Marshall B. Rosenberg was a Jewish man from Detroit who was bullied as a child for being poor and also for being Jewish. that really shaped his needs, his interests, and he developed NVC as a way to focus on feelings and needs all people have. He actually went so far as to get a PhD in psychology. So he's Dr. Marshall Rosenberg. Unfortunately, he is now deceased. He died of prostate cancer 2 years ago. Huge loss on the planet, but he's left a plethora of fabulous resources behind. Books, his work is internationally known all over the world now. And if you go online, you'll see that. You'll see that. He's known internationally. So back to the word nonviolence. He suggests that NVC is a way to focus on feelings and needs that all people have versus thinking and speaking in terms of dehumanizing labels and judgments that are easily heard as demanding, as blaming, and as just downright antagonistic. I'm sure we all have words we've heard: jerk, idiot, stupid, insensitive, selfish. And then you add some more words to that that we use when we're trying to get our needs met and trying to describe the behavior of the other person we didn't like. Rosenberg would say using those types of words are using words in a violent way that contributes disconnection and violence to our world. So that really helped me understand where the term nonviolent, compassionate communication came from. The next piece I'd like to share with you are two crucial questions that Marshall Rosenberg studied. The first question is, we know what to do when things are going well in communication. We communicate just fine. So what gets us off track? And in his study, the answer that he came up with is, what gets us off track is the crucial role of language. How we use words to express what's alive in us, what's going on in us. He said, we've learned a language that's good for telling people what's wrong with them. He calls that the language of jackal. And he introduced an animal symbol. So picture a jackal, kind of nervous, beautiful animal, nervous, a little wary, not sure, has claws, can pounce, really important, wanting to take care of itself and protect itself. So that is the first animal symbol in NVC. It's a language that's good for criticizing, insulting, demanding, put-downs, getting our needs met at other people's expense, the language of jackal. And I don't know about you, but when I use the language of jackal, I'm usually desperate. I'm desperate and scared, and it comes out in jackal. The second question Marshall Rosenberg studied was, what allows some people to stay connected to their heart even when they're hearing jackal, when they're hearing insults and criticisms? Some people seem to be able to stay balanced on that platform and connected with their heart. And he would ask the question, how do they do that? And the answer is they speak a completely different language. They speak the language of giraffe. And I brought my little giraffe that my sister gave me when I started getting into NVC and was so excited about it. And now she's become super excited about it too. Those people can stay connected to their heart under pressure because they're speaking the language of giraffe, which is the language of the heart. And did you know that a giraffe has the largest heart of any land mammal? A 28-pound heart. So in NVC, the emphasis is focusing on what's alive in my heart. What am I feeling and what am I needing that I'm talking? So the emphasis is on speaking and listening from the heart. And the way we sort that is into feelings and needs. Okay? So Rosenberg would say that giraffe is a life-serving language. It's a language of connection. It's a language of power with. whereas jackal language is a language of power over. Have you ever been with a person who wants to be right? They want to win. And they're probably going to be really tempted to use the language of jackal. Why? To get their needs met. Totally human impulse, right? We really want what we want, and we want it for a good reason. So what language are we choosing to get that need met and to get the thing solved the best we can, as soon as we can? And it's probably not the language of jackal. Giraffe, as I said, is the language of the heart. And giraffes know how to both listen well and speak their own truth. And yesterday we talked about something called screaming in giraffe. Using NVC, we can even be super intense if something is very, very important to us. But we do it with a different tone, with a different intention. Our intention is not to be right. Our intention is to connect. And that is the whole purpose of NVC. So, as I've said, I've used the word sort a lot. And in NVC, we sort in three main ways: by listening to ourselves. What are we feeling and needing in here? I'd call that self-empathy. Second way we can sort is to listen to them. What are they feeling and needing? Wondering. And the third way that we can sort is by speaking our truth in a way the other person can hear, speaking in the language of giraffe. And we do that by four main ways: talking about an observation of what happened, how do we feel about what happened, what values or needs are up for us based on what happened, and then what do we want to request to change, to make it better. We call that those four things, OFNR, observation, feeling, need, request. And when I first started learning NVC, I thought, how am I ever going to remember all that stuff? Well, just remember, you want to do it oftener. OFNR. Pretty easy to remember. So I'd like to say just a couple more words about the distinction of each one, of each component. And then I'd like to invite Hortense and Tim to come back and demonstrate what NVC language looks like, what the language of NVC looks like versus what we heard this morning first thing. So we want in NVC observations versus evaluations, assumptions and interpretations, just the facts. Not a bunch of assumptions about why that person is talking and they always do this, they just want to be right. No. Just facts about what we observed, or a direct quote, the words actually said. And then we want feelings versus thoughts. We want to say, I feel angry, I feel frustrated, versus a thought, I feel like you always do this just to have power over other people. Do you hear the difference between an emotion and a thought? And then in the need category, we want to speak in terms of needs and values versus strategies to get the need met. So when I heard you say this, I felt angry and frustrated because I really would have liked more mutual respect. That's a need or a value versus I need you to change how you treat me. You are rude. That's a strategy to meet a need. I need you to change fast. Yesterday. And then the final one is the request. What would we like that person to do? What request are we making? Given what I heard you say, I feel this way. I really would have liked, needed, valued this. Would you be willing to tell me what's going on for you? Would you be willing to sit down and talk with me about this? Would you be willing? Whatever. Whatever the request is versus a demand. I just said a request. Would you be willing to sit down and talk to me about what's going on between us? Could we do that over coffee tomorrow morning or today? Before supper? Something specific versus you need to stop doing that. I want you to stop that behavior. I've had it with you. So that's the difference between a request and a demand. So I'm hoping that's a lot of information I'm giving you. When we're learning to speak the language of giraffe, we're learning to both listen and speak. So we speak in OFNR and that kind of awareness. What am I feeling and needing? Why am I talking? And then we also listen to others with empathy, genuinely interested in what they're feeling and needing, that they're acting, talking, being the way they are. And that creates a kind of that field. I'll meet you there, as we're talking about with Rumi. So now I'd love to have Hortense and Tim come and show us the NVC way.
To stay here,
yes,
for the next part.
Okay.
I'm going to take the names of people who want to share experiences with Anne and ask Anne questions. Every time this woman opens her mouth, wisdom and information comes out. So, and not just for the person that's asking the question. Many of you are going to resonate with the person that's speaking up, and there'll be information there for you. Who's going to be first? Go ahead, Barb.
I'd like to know how you do that with the teenager that is standing there. I'd like to know how you do that with the teenager who was standing there ranting and raving against her in your face.
Oh, great question. It's true, isn't it? This is how it is. And I just want to say my answer is that once we learn empathy and our intention is to connect with why they're talking, they will feel that. If your intention is, I have another acronym that is WIMI, what is my intention? Is it to connect or correct? I didn't say that earlier, but it's something that Rosenberg stresses a lot too. So if your intention is to connect with your verbalizing teenager that is speaking in jackal, pure jackal it sounds like, right? Your job is to listen underneath the jackal, blah, 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 jackal, for the feelings and the needs. Why are they talking? It's not about you. This is my huge freedom piece in NVC. What they say is never about us, even though they say it is. It's about their unmet need. It's about their needs, their feelings, and their needs. It's about them. So can you look for that under their words? Can you look for the feelings and needs that are under their words? Does that make sense? Now that takes, as I said yesterday in the workshop, empathy, abs of steel. That takes some practice to not get torqued off by an insult that you're such a jerk, mom, or what, you know, whatever. I don't know what they say. It's hard to hear, isn't it? It's what we'd call a very hard to hear message in NVC. So I'll just say a few more words because I think it's such a great question. And that is just to balance yourself, center yourself, remind yourself of your intention, and stay silent and say, so what I'm hearing is what you really want is X. That's the simplest way I could put it here, quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you for that great question.
Ed Prinsler?
No. Thank you.
Ed Prinsler is next.
He doesn't want it, no.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Marianne?
I would just like you to give your opinion. Something that I've tried, and when two people cannot agree, then is it a good idea to say that neither of you are wrong, but one of you is a little bit more right than the other?
I would call that agreeing to disagree. And it's a perception that there's one way that's more right than the other. So it's tender ground. You can think it in your mind that you might be a little more right than the other person because your view meets your own values. Of course it's going to feel right and resonant to you because that's the strategy that best meets your needs. But when we don't agree with somebody, they have an equally valid set of feelings and needs on their side. And they're looking at it from their side. I hope this is making sense. So how do we stand in mutual respect and come up with a strategy that ends up meeting both people's needs? Sometimes we end up saying, this is hard, we can't agree, so we're going to agree to disagree, but at least it's done respectfully. Now I want to add on another thing that's coming up in my heart right now that Rosenberg would teach if he were here. And he would say, no matter what happens, in solving a messy problem, get to both people's needs first. So you get to your needs, you talk about them. and you talk about their needs and get the needs on the table. Write them on a sheet of paper. And I don't mean strategies to meet needs. I don't mean I need you to X, Y, Z. I don't mean that. I mean respect, kindness, financial responsibility. Those are needs or whatever they are. List them for both people. And Rosenberg says the solution most often will find you.
Heidi is next.
Thank you so much for your presentation. I'm sorry I wasn't able to make the workshop yesterday, but I have read parts of the truth before. My husband frustrates the hell out of me because I'm trying to have a conversation and I say something and it's silence. I don't get a response, I don't get a reply. I feel like I'm talking to the chair. And I've told him over and over again, like, why can't you respond? And he says, well, I've got nothing to say. But it's like, then say, even to say, I hear you, or okay, or aha, or like, how do I get that need met that I want to be sure that I've been heard by him? Like, because I was like, just so like, do you not hear me?
I think our husbands might be clones. I totally relate to that question. I could be you speaking that same need. I mean, this is my same need. I totally relate to it, and I hear how much you don't need a particular piece of advice from him. You just want to know he's present. You want to stay connected with him when you're trying to talk about something. And I just want to throw out two things that are coming to me. My husband and I are reading a book by Drs. John and Julie Gottman on marriage, principles of marriage. And John Gottman says one of the things we can do that really helps in a situation like this, we have three choices. We can turn toward our partner, we can turn away, or we can turn against. So it's a way to turn toward our partner. Even if we don't have anything to say, we are turning toward with eye contact. So, right. And so in NBC authenticity, we really try and get away from hinting or passive aggressiveness or any kind of, mainly hinting or mind reading. So in NBC, would you like to hear what I would say and what I have said to my husband that you could try on for yourself? Okay. I notice that I'm talking and you're sitting in front of your iPad or the newspaper or whatever, and I notice that I'm feeling a little awkward and a little uncomfortable, a little sad, actually, because I just want to know you're listening. I want some connection, and I can't tell if you're interested or not. So would you be willing to put down the paper or the iPad or whatever it is you're doing right now? And can we just talk for just a few minutes about this? Because this is becoming a really noticeable pattern in our marriage. And it's important to me. Would you be willing now, or what's another good time for you? So you're not blaming him. You're not saying, you don't care about me, you don't pay any. There's no blame or shame there. You're being authentic in OFNR.
And Rob? And then the last one will be Clara.
Good morning. I'd like to talk about Hortense and Tim.
Oh, good.
Because I admit, at one moment, I just wanted to slug Tim. Excuses, pick up your bloody boots. But I know I'm missing the point. To me, that story seemed enormously cumbersome. And it tripped over his boots. How do we deal with that quickly? I mean, I don't know if I have time in my life to compose a 10-minute soliloquy when Bettina is getting under my skin. So, How could Hortense have just said it quicker? Maybe Hortense knows.
No, I defer to Anne. Anne knows. I'm proud. practicing and knows.
I need to know this too.
It's such a great real life question. Thank you, Rob. Because this comes up a lot in NVC. It's like, oh brother, this takes a long time to talk this way. Yes and no. So I think, in my opinion, now you're asking my opinion, this is my opinion based on the practice I've done. If it's our intention to step into a new way of hearing language and practice NVC, let's say, we start to get a new, like what we'd call almost NVC consciousness, a way of sorting, oh, I wonder what's really going on here. And our whole tone starts to change, in my opinion. I think my whole tone, I can still speak in Jackal perfectly well, thank you. But in general, my tone, I think, started to shift. So that if I, you know, had to say something, it wasn't pure Jackal, maybe it was half Jackal. Or, you know, it didn't land as badly as it used to or something. So, to get to your question, I think that eventually with NVC practice, you can say more, the more clipped version, the more succinct version, I'm tripping over your boots. I can't stand it. Please pick them up by tomorrow. Please pick them up in 30 seconds. I can't, as you know, I can't live this way. So a more succinct, but the tone is different. It's coming from the heart. It's not to blame them as being a slob or a jerk. So it eventually can take less time. However, I really believe that if we don't learn a way to be more authentic in the moment, we keep creating messes that take longer to clean up in the end. They take way longer to clean up in the end, so that takes time too. A Jackal mess.
Just correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm getting from this, because the details of the interactions, I guess it's up to us to invent. But what I'm getting is that there's always another way to look at it from the other person's point of view. There could be a reason for all of this, and that compassion is part of that. We can't just snap that. There's always a reason. Tim had a reason. It makes sense. And so is that what I'm getting? There's always another side.
Yes. Oh, if I'm understanding you right, yes. I mean, we human beings are multi-layered, amazing human beings, and will never be inside another person's head. I can barely sort inside my head sometimes. So what I hear you saying, Rob, is that we want to be aware of all the possibilities that could be going on for that person. We're not mind reading. We can't know what's going on in their head, but just to keep an open heart, that we can't possibly know. Is that what you mean? And label them and box them up and stereotype them as X, Y, Z. I don't know. That doesn't relate to your initial question, so I don't know if I'm on it. You were concerned. If I'm going to give you empathy for your original question, what I heard you saying and concerned about is you want a compassionate, less bulky way to get this done and stay connected. Is that right?
Yes.
And I think that can come with practice. It doesn't have to be like the skit here, but this was a way to demonstrate all the components. And what I really want to say also in it, you know, this aspect of, this takes a long time, this is kind of bulky. I love it when Rosenberg would say, once you learn, and we talked about this quite a bit yesterday, once you learn classical giraffe, once you learn the model, classical giraffe, the way we're describing it here, and you're coming from the heart, your words will take care of themselves. Your heart knows what to say. Once you're connected to your heart and what your intention is, you see, then you can just go with the flow. And that won't take as long because you won't have to bing, 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 but you can trust the flow of your intuition and your heart intention. I hope that makes sense.
Thank you. Is it the group's wishes that Clara could have her question? We are getting awfully close to closing.
Yes. My challenge is using and easy way with my son, who's a psychologist. He's got his master's. And it's an, oh God, Mom, here you go. Like, I know human behavior. It's like, you're trying to share your needs or, you know, and I can't seem to connect because he knows more.
Well, I really appreciate that question, Clara, and I Rosenberg writes about that question in his book, actually. Oh no, you're using that psychology stuff on me again, you know, and then with your dealing. My opinion, if you're asking for that, right, you're asking for that, is that underneath, it's all about the human condition, and if human needs are universal, we don't have to use the NVC jargon. We don't have to sound like a therapist. And that's what I was pointing to with Rob's question too. Once we learn classical giraffe and we understand it's important to just have the facts and the observation, then the emotion is important. We don't have to put it in OFNR perfect order every time. But why is he talking and why are you talking? What's the problem? What is the unmet need? And if you can just get to that in your own heart language, what I'm longing for is, son, I want you to get what I really want is, and put it in your own words. You don't have to sound like him. You don't have to sound like a therapist. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are, I admit, we are learning on purpose classical giraffe with all the pieces here, so you know how the model goes together. And then it's like music. It's like once you learn the basic scales and the basic chord structure and the staff and the time signature and all that cool stuff about music, once you get that, then you can improvise and play with it. But you know why you're doing it. To get to the need.